Exodus 34, 1 through 9. Now Yahweh said to Moses, cut out for yourselves two stone tablets like the former ones, and I will write on the tablets the words that were on the former tablets, which you smashed. So be ready by morning and come up into the morning, the Mount Sinai, and present yourself there to me on the top of the mountain. And no one is to come up with you, nor let anyone be seen anywhere on the mountain, even the flocks, the herds, and not the graves in front of the mountain. So he cut out two stone tablets like the former ones, and Moses got up early in the morning and went up to Mount Sinai, as Yahweh had commanded him, and he took the two stone tablets in his hand. And the Lord descended in a cloud and stood there with him as he called upon the name of Yahweh. And then Yahweh passed in front of him and proclaimed, the Lord God, compassionate and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in faithfulness and truth, who keeps faithfulness for thousands, who forgives wrongdoing, violation of his law, and sin. Yet he will by no means leave the guilty unpunished, inflicting the punishment of fathers onto the children, onto the grandchildren, to the third and fourth generation. And Moses hurried to bow low before the ground and worship. And he said, if in any way I have found favor in your sight, Lord, please, may the Lord go along in our midst, even though the people are so obstinate, and pardon our wrongdoing and our sin, and take us as your own possession.
I can almost guarantee that you all are going to mispronounce this word. Now, you can't even read that one, but there it is in English. Some little guy one time looked at that and said, what's this cheesed thing? And this is the Hebrew word chesed. You almost, it's not C-H, it's like you're trying to clear your throat. Yeah, like Johann Sebastian Bach. Chesed is a wonderful, wonderful word. The majority of the time of its translation in the Bible, New American Standard, it's translated as loving kindness. 253 times this word is used in the New American Standard Bible. Most of those, it's just describing God. It's described. In fact, this word, Chris, this word is the number one descriptor of the character of God. Loving kindness. What is loving kindness? Well, just noodle on that word just for a minute with me. What does that look like? Loving kindness. What conjures in your mind?
Someone that's loving and kind.
Okay, someone that's loving and kind. And I guarantee you that's why they chose 75 to 80% of the time to translate it as loving kindness. It's 176 times it's translated loving kindness. But loving kindness doesn't grasp the whole meaning of the word. It's loving kindness, or 32 times as kindness, but it's also translated as loyal or loyalty and devotion. I think of it as steadfast loyalty. I'm true to you to the end. You ever had a friend that was so deep, a friend that even when they let you down, you were there for them? Anybody have a friend like that? That even, that they're such a dear friend that even when they disappointed you, you're there for them. Even when they drop the ball, you pick it up. I had a friend like that once. Yeah, had to pay him big bucks to be my friend, but that's a different joke. It was Indiana. It was February. It was freezing. In fact, it was so freezing that the diesel fuel in my rabbit gelled. And I was stalled out on the interstate halfway between home and where I was going for a Bible study. Fortunately, I was able to pull up to a, what do you call those places? Rest stop. There was a rest stop on the off ramp, and there was a telephone. And so I could call the people I was going to have a Bible class with, say, I'm not going to make it. And then I could call my friend Steve, who lived 40 miles away, who was at that time snuggled comfortably with his entire family, a fire going, and they were watching Mary Poppins. I called him. I said, I'm stuck out here, Steve. What do I do? He said, I'll come get you. And he came, got me. Now that's steadfast loyalty. He said, well, Rod, you know, called AAA or there's a wrecker or something. And he said, I'll come get you. And he came, got me. Now that would be an illustration of this word, okay, which describes God. Okay. Or maybe we would say unchanging love. Hard to think of something that you could do that would change God's love for you, right? Romans, Paul said, 5, even while we were sinners, he died for me. Hard, he said, the love of God is manifested in that. An unchanging love. What can you do to make God love you less than he does? Well, as soon as you say, well, you know, I did this, this, and this, you look at the flip side of that. And the question then is, what can you do to make God love you more? And you can't. God loves you because you're you, not because you did this or didn't do that. He loves you because you're you. It's an unchanging love. Now, sadly, we don't have to reciprocate that love, and he's duty bound by his nature, not to, as Jim was saying, not to bring us back to life, but he loves us anyway. Unchanging love. Here's one that really kind of, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? It just resonates with me. God made a covenant, and he's committed to keep that covenant. That's all tied up in this word. The nature of chesed is that we have a God steadfastly loyal. His love won't change, and he's committed to the covenant he makes with us. The only thing that possibly can break that is we don't stay committed to the covenant. Or we don't keep loving him. He'll never quit loving us. And so I want us to look at just three key passages with a couple of referent passages. But first of all, let's take a peek at Moses and the burning bush. And that's in chapter 3 of Exodus. Moses, how old was Moses when he encountered a bush that was burning and wouldn't be burned up? Anybody know? He's in his 80. He was 80 years old when he was keeping sheep out there. you know, you think of Colonel Sanders, started his very lucrative and Kentucky Fried Chicken after 65. He didn't hold a candlestick to Moses. Moses didn't even start serving God's people until he was 80. But it started at the bush. Started at the bush. And so when Jesse Jackson says, get out the bushes, forget that. Go to the bush, because that's where God met Moses, okay? And so I want to just pop down to verse 13 through 15. And so Moses saw the bush, and he had this conversation with God. God says, I'm going to send you to Egypt to deliver my people. And so Moses started to backpedal. A series of excuses of why he wasn't the one God should send. I wonder how often I do that in my life. And so you use somebody else. I'm not the one for this job, or I don't know that I have the qualifications. One of the things that God said to Moses, well, I'll be with you. I'll teach your mouth what to say. That's all he really needed to know. But I'm going to go to your people, and they're, listen to this. Chris, you may or may not have known this, Roger. This may be new information. Mark, Every nation had its national god in the days of Moses. Every nation had its national god. Israel had no national god. Moses is going to go say, come on, our God's, well, what's his name? See, every nation had a national god, and every national god had a name. I mean, I could say Dagon, for example, or Marduk, or Isis, or Osiris. You know, every nation had a god that had a name. What's your God's name? Well, we just call him God. What's his name? I mean, that's what he is, but what's his name? And so Moses said, I'm going to go and talk to these people. Verse 13, then Moses said to God, behold, I'm going to the sons of Israel, and I shall say to them, the God of your forefathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, what is his name? What am I going to tell them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am has sent me to you. I am. Whoa. I am. I am. I am. I am. What does that mean to you? I am. It's not that I was. And it's not I will be. I am the continually existing one. And so you tell them that's who sent you. And God furthermore said to Moses, thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, the Lord. Now, what is that word, that phrase, the Lord? What is the word there? Yahweh. That's God's personal name. It's his function is to be Lord, to be master, to be provider and guide. But his name, see, I don't ever sign a check with husband. I mean, I don't have a husband, but I don't sign my checks that way. And I don't sign my checks with father. I sign my checks with Rod MacArthur. Okay? That's my name. God is going to make a covenant with these people. Is I want them to know Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Now, he said up in verse 13, the God of your fathers. What is your name? I'm the God of your father. They're going to want to know what your name is. And so Moses, God said, I am who I am. I am sent you. But here he says, this is my memorial name. This is how my people will remember me forever. I am. Now, look at this word, Yahweh. It's four Hebrew letters. Yod, He, Vav, He. Four Hebrew letters. Actually, three, but one of them is used twice. Yod, He, Vav, He. And I'm told that these four letters, YHWH, Yod, He, Vav, He, these four letters represent the past, the present, and the future participle of to be. I don't know how you have a past participle. What wasing, wasing, ising, and willing to. And so I just say if Yahweh is the Hebrew equivalent, then was am will be. Was am will be. Was am will be is the English equivalent. Now, what am I going with all that? He says, this is my name forever, and this is my memorial name to all generations. I am the self-existing one. I have always been, I am now, and I always will be. Over in Hebrews chapter 13, you know what that says? Jesus Christ, the same, yesterday, today, and forever. Same God, the always existing one. Why is that important to you? The always existing one.
Have
you ever had a friend come into your life, wasn't there before, is there for a while and then goes out of your life, maybe ghosts you, maybe dies on you, but he's no longer there. I have. But I have a God who always has been, is now, and always will be. And therefore, any relationships that he makes with me, I can trust to be forever relationships, enduring relationships. I can count on him being there for me. Well, what does that mean to you? I can count on him being there for me. I could count on Steve being there for me. But when he died of melanoma cancer back however many years ago, it's been 30 years ago, he can't be there for me anymore. As dear a friend as he was, he cannot be there for me anymore. I hope to see him again. And if I do, I'll accuse him of taking the shortcut home. But he can't be there for me. God will always be there for me. Always. Now, I'd like to think that I will always be here for you, but I know the reality is I'll always be here for you for the next 10 years, and after that, I can't guarantee a thing. I can't even guarantee tomorrow. But God is always there for me and with me. Now, fast forward to Exodus 20. Now, before I put the next slide up, you tell me what's going on in Exodus 20. Divide the 20 by 2 and you got the first clue. This is the initial giving of the Ten Commandments, okay? So we want to look at, which ones do we want to look at? 4 through 6. I'm going to just read down that far, not jump in, but read down. Then God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord, Yahweh, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. Okay. Notice that that's the prologue for the Ten Commandments. I am the God that brought you out of Egypt. All right. I am Yahweh who brought you out of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. Now, I pause on that one because that's not the one I want to look at, but I want to pause on that and say, given what you know about God from the bush, why would you want a different God? Why would you want to elevate a God that comes onto the scene because a culture comes onto the scene and then fades from the scene because that culture dies? Why would you want a God like that rather than one that was, am, and will be always here for you? But it boggles the mind that people so quickly trade away our God to have something that is ephemeral. I learned what ephemeral meant the other day, by the way. Epi means upon, and hemera is the day. Together for a day. Short-lived. Ephemeral. Why would you want a God that is like that? Right? You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them. For I, the Lord, Yahweh, your God, am a jealous God. I give you myself completely, and I want yourself completely me. See? That kind of relationship. And so I don't want you to have an idol or an image you couldn't look like. You know, did you notice? We haven't been there yet, but in chapter 33, Moses wanted to see God, didn't he? And what did God tell him? Nobody can see my face and live. There's a reason, I mean, probably established in the very nature of God, but there's a reason that's established in the nature of man. What did man do? What did these Israelites do when a few years later, God said, make a brass snake and stick it up on a stick so that if anybody is bitten, they can look at that and not die. What did they do? They turned it into an idol. In fact, it was in the days of Josiah that thing was finally broken to pieces, called it a piece of brass. It's not a god, it's a piece of brass. People have a tendency to promote things. He says, don't do that. There's a reason that God didn't let us see his face. One is probably rooted in who he is, and it was just You can't look at the sun without going blind. You can't look at the maker of the sun without it killing you. But the second would be, so you don't have an image to make. I don't want you worshiping an image. I want you worshiping me, is what God would say to him. And so he says, don't make, you shall not worship them because I am a God. I want your full affection. I want your full affection. When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? He was being asked by Jewish people to tell the greatest commandment that God laid forth in the writings of Moses. So, what is the greatest commandment, Michael? Nope, that's not the greatest one. The greatest one is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind. Okay, Deuteronomy 6. And then Jesus said, and I want to tell you, there's another one just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's where Michael was going. Love your neighbor. That's in Leviticus. Love your neighbor as yourself. I think the people were very disappointed because they wanted Jesus to take one of the top 10. And he went outside the top 10. He said, most important thing you'll ever do. Chris, the most important thing you'll ever do is love your God with all your heart. He says, I am a jealous God. I want your full affection. I don't want divided affection. I don't want anything in your life coming ahead of me. And then I want you to love each other like you love me. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for. And so, Yahweh, your God, is a jealous God. Now, we've been studying, haven't we, Greg, in Joshua. In fact, we just finished looking at Joshua 24, where Joshua says in verse 15, you make a choice. Today, make a choice. He didn't say sometime make a choice. He didn't say when you get your mind set to it, make a choice, or put it off for later. He says, choose you today. Choose you today whom you'll serve. The gods that were beyond the river, or the gods in whose land you just kicked out. As for me and my family, we choose to serve the Lord, Yahweh. We choose to serve the Lord. And they all will serve the Lord, will serve the Lord. It was a superficial comment. It was a superficial comment they made. And that's why, did it ever startle you that Joshua would say something so negative as what he said? Joshua said to the people, you will not be able to serve Yahweh, for he's a holy God. When he said, choose to serve him, they says you're not going to be able to do that. Why would he say something like that? Well, because he's a holy God, which means I'm going to mess up. I'm not going to be able to rise to the standard that he sets. Now, Mark, he doesn't care that I get there. He cares that I try to get there. You see the difference? It's not something I can attain, but it's something I should shoot for constantly. I want to be like God. I want to be like, I'm going to mess up. And so maybe that's what Joshua meant. You'll not be able. Or maybe what he was saying is while you have divided affections, put away the gods. Why would he tell them to put away the gods that are among them? Because they were there. These people had a divided, I mean, these are the people, the next generation after Moses gave the Ten Commandments, right? And they had a divided affection. You'll not be able to do this because your affections are divided. And I've got to take the same idea that I cannot be wholly committed to God if my affections are divided, if I'm distracted by other things. If he's not first, he's not. Can I say it this way, Roger? If Jesus Christ is not first place in my life, he doesn't want to be there at all. He will not take second place. It's all or nothing but Jesus. So he's a jealous God. And continue the reading here then in verse 6. Now, you're not going to be able, if you're divided in your affections, if you've got other gods before me, you're worshiping other gods, you're not going to be able to walk with me. But the reality is, and we pointed to this already, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to trip. I love what David said, and it's either in 73 or 37, and I have a hard time remembering, but I got both of them covered, where he says, Psalm that 73 or Psalm 37, he says, when I stumble, you lift me up by my right hand. You don't let me stay down. David, passionate about God, and he understood that it's not walking without making a mistake. It's walking without turning loose of God. And so that's where verse 6 comes in. But showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. Now, Rod, you just said that we aren't going to be able to do that perfectly. Yeah, I did. I did say that. But I also said it isn't the keeping, it's the striving to keep. It's not doing it perfectly, it's desiring to do it perfectly. It's that intent. Another way we could say it is the commitment of faith. Am I? Here's something for us all to noodle on. Am I as loyal to the covenant I made with God as I expect him to be toward me? Am I as loyal to that covenant? It's easy to grasp the idea that God loves me so much that he's willing to forgive me anything I do. He forgave David adultery. He forgave Paul murder. He's willing to forgive me anything I do. It's easy then to take that and be kind of lax. Well, he'll forgive me for this. He'll forgive me for that. Rather than have that burning desire, I don't ever want him to have to forgive me. I'm glad he will, but I don't want him to have to. I don't want to let him down. I don't want to disappoint him. I want to live up to the standards. And I'm just so grateful that the safety net is there, but I don't want to fall. Loving kindness to thousands who love me and do life my way. Well, our last verse is the one, or passage is the one that we read from. That's chapter 34. Now, chapter 34 comes hard on the heels. See if you can believe this. Chapter 34 comes immediately after chapter 33. Now, chapter 33 is the aftermath of the golden calf. The golden calf was in chapter 32. God's deep. What kind of God is he that starts with a J? He's jealous. And I don't want to be crude and lewd and rude about this, but God viewed his relationship with the nation of Israel as husband-wife relationship. And he comes home and he finds his wife in bed with another man. How does he feel? How does he feel? He comes home and he finds his wife in bed with another man. Now I can see in faces the rage, even the thought, my wife sleeping with another man. But that's what God saw when Moses, when they made that golden calf. That's what God saw. Do you realize? When did they do the golden calf thing? When? Where was Moses when they did it? He was up on the mountain doing what? Getting the tablets. Okay. And so Joshua said, "Man, it sounds like there's war down there." And Moses said, "That ain't war. That's a party. That's an orgy going on down there." Did you realize, Dallas, did you know this? That Moses was the first man to break all Ten Commandments. He threw the stones down in anger and shattered all ten of them, were broken right there one time. It was a horrible. He said to the Israel, "You have committed a great sin. You have committed a great sin." God was willing to abandon them in the wilderness. I think he was testing Moses, but. He was, and Moses pleaded with God, and that's what chapter 33 is all about, pleading with God. Take this people back. Don't punish those who have, but take this people back and keep your promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What would the nations think about you if you aren't able to keep your promise? And so God did. Now, while he's doing that, I wanted to read a little bit at the end of chapter 33 now. And Yahweh, verse 17, the Lord, Yahweh said to Moses, I will also do this thing of which you have spoken, for you have found favor in my sight. I'm not sure I should have looked this up, but I think that favor is loving kindness. Chesed. You found chesed in my sight. I'm willing to do this thing. And I have known you by name. Whoa. I don't know what you think about President Biden or what you think about President Trump, and this is not political. But I know this one thing. Neither one of them know you by name. Neither one of them know you by name. There's no personal relationship between you and the president. But God said to Moses, I've known you by name. You're my guy. Then Moses said, I pray, show me your glory. Show me how glorious you are. And he said, I myself will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord, Yahweh, before you. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show compassion on whom I will show compassion. But he said, you can't see my face, for no man can see me and live. Then Yahweh said, behold, there's a place by me, and you shall stand there on the rock. And it will come about while my glory is passing by that I'll put you in the cleft of the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. So I'll put you there, cover you with my hand until I have passed by. And then I will take my hand away and you shall see my back. Now, I don't think he's saying you'll see my back or my backside. I think he's saying that you'll see what's left after I pass by. You'll see the glow in the rock. You'll see the glow of my having been here. I think that's what he's saying. Not that you can't see my face, but I'll show you my back. I don't think God is turning his back on Moses is what I'm saying. I think he meant the glory, which is what Moses wanted to see. Now, chapter 34. Now, the Lord Yahweh said to Moses, cut out for yourself two tablets of stone, like the former. You broke them. You replace them. Okay. The mosaic replacement policy was make two more tablets of stone. I mean, God could easily have just made, use his laser finger and cut out. You do it. You make the stones. And so he'd be ready by morning, and in the morning, come up here and present yourself, and nobody gets to come with you. Nobody comes with Moses. And so cut two new stones, that's there in verse 4. And so in verse 5, the Lord Yahweh descended in the cloud and stood there with him as he called, as he, Moses, called upon the name of the Lord Yahweh. What does that mean? He called upon the name of the Lord, called upon the name of Yahweh. Is he saying the name? Is he invoking the presence of God? Asking God to be present with him? I think that's probably closer to it. Not just, hey, Yahweh, how you doing? Please come. Please have that closeness with me. I think that's what it is. Verse 6. Yahweh, verse 5, stood with Moses. Jim, how does that make you feel? That God, Yahweh, the Lord, stood with Moses. Stood there with him. Two guys, out maybe. I remember when I first went to Yosemite, and we're up on. I don't even remember the name of the place where you. No, it's up on the ridge, Glacier Point. Up on Glacier Point, had an overview of half a mile above the valley below, half domes off to the side, and all the features on the other side of the valley. It's just standing there with Andy and just looking at that. This is marvelous. Just, the two of them just stood there. Andy and I just, he's taking it all in. He's just more than we could take in. And his friends standing together. You do know, don't you, that God called Abraham his friend. He said, Moses, I've known you by name. And there they stood. There they stood. This God, this holy God, stood there with Moses. And he stood there, verse 5, stood there with him as he called upon the name of Yahweh, the Lord. Then the Lord passed in front. Now, that's what he said he would do. See, what you're reading here in chapter 34 is what he promised to do at the end of chapter 33. This is not a second story. It's God keeping his promise. I will do that. I will tell you. And so now here he's doing it. And he passed in front of him and proclaimed, Yahweh, Yahweh God, the compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and truth, who keeps loving kindness for thousands, who forgives iniquity and transgression. Yet he'll no, by no means leave unpunished those who are guilty. But look at this. The great sin comes into confrontation with, comes into juxtaposition, comes face to face. Two opposing forces colliding, the deep sin of man and the great compassion and loving kindness of God. And God's comment was, here's who I am, compassionate, gracious, slow to anger. You're going to take a lot on your part to rile me up because I love you so much. The only thing that I've ever seen that riles God up is when I put something ahead of him. Now, I might go out here and act stupid. David committed adultery, got a man drunk, had him killed. God forgave him. Paul was killing the followers of Jesus, murdering, forcing them to blaspheme. God forgave him. Not only did God forgive him, he used him. But when I turn my back on him, there's nothing he can do. And so he says, yet I will remember the sin of people. But I'm really this guy. I'm really this. And this is what the concept of loving kindness is. This is who, this is our God. This is who he is. He loves us. You know that song? Phil Wickham? This is our God. This is who he is. He loves us. This is our God. This is what he does. He saves us. Check it out. Google it. Listen to it. Amazing song. This is our God. This is who he is. He loves us. This is our God. This is what he does. He forgives us. He wants to lead us into fill in the blank. He wants to lead us into, pardon? He wants to lead us in paths of righteousness. He wants to lead us into, yeah, his arms. I want to hug you. That's what he wants. Into his relationship. And so we come back to chesed, loving kindness. What does Yahweh's loving kindness mean to you? Now, this is where you engage with the message. This is interactive. You're not me telling you what to say. This is me asking you, what does what you just learned about God today, maybe there's nothing new, maybe it refocused or maybe polished the tarnish off or knocked the ash off, as Paul told Timothy, kindle afresh, knock the ash off, the gift in you. Maybe that's all it did, but maybe it brought new thoughts to you. The question is, what does it mean to you? You don't have to answer audibly, but you do have to answer. It's got to mean something to you, that this is the way God feels about you. It's steadfast loyalty. I'm not giving up on you. Now, you may be doing stupid stuff right now, but I got plans for you. Paul was passionate. Read Philippians 3 to just see how far he had advanced in his passion for God. But that passion led him to resist Jesus and kill Christians. But God never gave up on him. I got plans for you. Steadfast loyalty. Unchanging love. Mark, the only way you can disappoint God is if you give up on him. He's going to love you through thick and thin, through stupid and wise, through foolish and crazy. He's going to love you until you give up on him. Unchanging, he'll still love you. He just won't be able to bless you. Unchanging love. Commitment to covenant. Steadfast loyalty, unchanging love, commitment to the covenant. This is our God. This is who he is. He loves us. So what does it mean to you, knowing these things? If you want to chime in, I'm all ears, like Ross Perot used to say. But if not, that's fine. Okay, I'm going to tell you what it means to me. I can trust him with my whole life. I can trust him. Even when I can't see how what he's asking me to do will work, I can trust him because he loves me. And he's steadfastly committed to my well-being. If what it looks like he wants me to do scares me, what? I can trust him. I can trust him. I don't have to trust me to do it and say it right. I just have to trust me to stay. I want to stay connected, but I can trust him. I can trust him with my whole life. What about you? What about you?
Slightly different subject. The world is always teaching us things like, how to relax, how to enjoy life, and so forth. And one of the false religions involves yoga and a bunch of that and meditation. For us, it's in the word God, right? Try this with me. When you purposely take a breath in with God and exhale with God. Now, driving in the car. Just this peace. The world would call it a cleansing breath, but it's just like this peace of breathing in. Okay, God's, we have to have breath, and these are breath of life. Yeah. I love focusing on that name, Yahweh.
I met one week several years ago. I was at a conference and I met a preacher from the East Coast. His name is David Curtis. Some of you know the name. And he finished his presentation and he had maybe 5 minutes left. And he said, I want to share something with you that I've been plowing into the Hebrew. And Yah, it's like a slingshot. It's like a stick that Y's out, and you can cut it off and make a slingshot. Not their kind of slingshot, our kind. But they used it as a tent peg because you could drive it into the ground, and then the ropes would be held back by the Y structure. That's the Yah, the Yod. And then Hey is like, hey! Or look. Or see, behold. And then the va or the wa is like a W, only it was a human hand. Behold the hand. Behold the nail. That's what the name Yahweh carries with it. Look at the hand. Look at the nail. The everlasting loving kindness of God went to the depths of showing his steadfast loyalty to me by letting his son be nailed to a cross.